hard time holding these alligators down.
They'll give you two claps and a Ric Flair.
Tim Livingston.
Emotional security is like the blanket that you tuck your soul in.
Pete Livingston.
You ready for Joe Buck to set you up? Yeah. That's what I think he's saying. He's like, hey, you're about to sleep with Joe Buck.
And Sim.
This is our candy orchestra.
Mm. It's still going. Those are some good pop rocks.
Los Livingston Brothers.
So this is our fourth podcast in 24 hours?
It's the Super Bowl wrap-up show, dog.
My God.
If there was ever a time for us to capitalize on our non-existent popularity.
This is... Hey, we're giving the people they want.
Damn right, Jalen Rose. Pete, guess what? Open a couple up. Let's do this.
All
right. I mean, come on. We already got crap from Robin and Joe, so I drove over here.
Yes.
Our good friends Robin and Joe, who are in the neighborhood, they were walking over from Joe's house.
Yeah.
And,
where's the light you need to say?
Oh, that actually might be. But anyway, they saw me driving over, and he's like, how are you operating a motor vehicle right now? And I was just like, damn it.
Because
I let my people down. And by people, I mean my drunk friends. So
they're probably hambone.
They're probably hambone. They were walking, no joke, to the liquor store to buy cat food. Congratulations to Joe and Robin for that incredible match.
You have on your keys?
No, mine doled out. It didn't work anymore.
Damn.
So
that's cool.
Pete will do the bottle trick because he's a boss. My goodness.
Thank you, Colin.
But yeah, so this is show number 181.
181. One sip will make a jig of flip.
Thank you, Pete, with the Jay-Z line.
Well, actually, that's 151.
Yeah, 151.
Damn it.
181 is like...
No, that's 187.
Well, yeah, that's different. We're going to have our homicide show in a few weeks here. this is most, without a doubt, like the most... Like, how the hell are we doing four shows in 24 hours? I can't believe it.
Well, when you have stuff to talk about,
yeah,
you can do
We're cranking out the content.
You kind of have to because there were many a weeks.
Yeah. Oh, no, we're totally making up for lost time.
We should be around.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, you know, if you actually count the weeks from when we started, we should. We should be like a 210 right now without weeks taken off. Hell, we, except for the 1 week we missed when you were getting married. And I think I was in Las
Vegas. Which was a lot of fun. I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
Well, you were not in Las Vegas.
No, when I was in Los Angeles for Christmas a couple years ago.
Mm.
So, but yeah, since we left KSVY, because Sundays at 11 was just becoming really bad for us. We had school.
You had school or work really
early? Work early morning. Pete had the baby, and it was 4 months old, and I was like, yeah. You're just sitting there going, like, I have to wake up at 5:30 in the morning. This is not conducive to me, you know.
Well, and so. When Rory was a new baby, the sleep schedule was just, it was every few hours.
Yeah.
So I would be there, it would be like 11, we do our show in the midnight, or we get back home.
Right.
And I knew that, like, in an hour or two.
You'd be waking up to get Rory.
And then I would get up another few hours later, yeah. I'm just like.
And so we made the decision to not do that and decide to go the podcast route, go back to our roots. And so here we are in a 24-hour period doing our fourth podcast. We're like Mark Maron up in this bitch. All right, so we're here to talk about the Super Bowl. And first off, it is one of the best Super Bowls of all time.
It ended up being It ended up being... better. And you know what? I'm not gonna... I don't think you ever watch a Super Bowl and from the get-go are like, oh, this is gonna be a classic. Right. You really don't know until the end.
It was a scoreless first quarter.
Yeah.
So, but the largest lead either team had was 10, and that was the Seahawks.
I thought it was 14.
No, 10. It was 10. And The biggest thing I got out of it was that
it's a vine of.
Oh, checking the. He's checking the. He's checking the ball. Okay, Cam Chancellor, okay. You're okay in my book with that one. That's pretty good. There's a vine out there. It's definitely, if you're, by the time you've seen this, you probably maybe already watched it, but it's on an incomplete pass. Cam Chancellor picking up the ball, squeezing it to make sure that it's not.
That's pretty good. That one was over. That's good.
But this game was just ridiculous.
I could not believe. I'm just going to go right to the
end. Yeah, we got to start at the end.
It was the 49ers. That's all I kept saying. I literally texted right before the interception was thrown at the goal line.
Yeah.
I said, they are not going to be dumb like the 49ers and throw it. And literally, right when I sent the text message, the ball snapped. They tried to sneak in a quick slant that got jumped and picked off.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't believe it.
And after the game, Pete Carroll took responsibility when he was talking with Favell as his offensive coordinator and said that we decided that because New England was in a complete goal line stand. But that's what I'm saying. It's like they decided that because they brought in their biggest goal line unit,
they could throw it
because they could put three wide receivers out there. But what happened... And this is why I hate the call. And you know what? Like, the analytics people are going to tear this play apart. When you run a stack, and your cornerback is the second guy on the stack, you have one responsibility, and that is to cut off the slant. That is your only responsibility in that play.
Well, here's the general...
That's your only responsibility.
For defensive backs, linebackers, for everybody that's not a defensive lineman, you play on the line of scrimmage.
Right.
That's what you are supposed to do.
Right.
For that reason. You know they want to hit the quick slant.
Right.
You play that first and then adjust to any double moves, or if they try and do a fade to the corner,
right.
You try and just recover from there.
Right.
And so first off, kudos to the freaking rookie.
Oh my God.
You just went down in New England Patriots history.
Yeah, no, in NFL history, you know.
For making that play in that situation, you know, and the only way you can do something like that is the anticipation. You probably saw it on film or something.
And he did. He said they were prepared for that.
Well, he said that he just envisioned it. He said he knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And you could just see it as soon as, was it Doug Baldwin?
No, it was Curse. It was Curse.
Who I think I said would make the final catch of the game, which would have been crazy. As soon as he made the break, he made the perfect read.
Yeah, no, he did.
And it was just like, I literally could not believe what I saw.
And that's the problem with that entire setup is you only have one read, you only have one throw. You're not going to go off of that because the way that defenses play that now is, you have to play off so that you don't give it away to the quarterback, and you have to beat the receiver to the ball. And that's exactly what happened. It was like the most textbook.
Well, you can see it's incredible. You want to know why it's really impressive for him as a rookie is because there was no second guessing.
No, none.
He was he didn't want to kind of commit to the slant.
Mm-mm, mm-mm.
He said, "I'm going. If I see him even break, it could be a double move. Right. He could be getting baited." It could be that he's doing an out and he's just hesitating and heading for the pylon, but he just went.
Right.
And he didn't, I don't want to mess up. It's like, there's no second chances.
No.
So got to give him credit on that. Yeah. But my God, it was second down and you are knocking on the door.
You're at the 1 yard
Nobody line. Was stopping Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
Nobody was talking to Marshawn Lynch.
Marshawn Lynch.
It was just like
he didn't have a negative run all night.
This is how crazy it is. You have two franchise workhorses in Frank Gore, Marshawn Lynch,
right?
Both within the five against defenses that were probably a little tired.
Yeah, just a little bit.
And you were running on them,
right? You ran for 150 Frank yards.
Frank Gore, as soon as Haloti Ngata was out of the game. He was gashing them, and it was like, hey, why stop giving him the rock? Same thing with Marshawn Lynch, and then they get within the five. Why do you throw it? Yeah. You know?
So this is, it's just so, just kind of give you, this is the final kind of rundown. Patriots, 162 yards running the football. 162 yards running the football. And they decide to throw it on second and one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. How do you
have three?
Yeah.
Three downs. Yeah. Even if you spread it out, yeah. Do whatever. Hand it off. Yeah.
Well, here's, so the other thing is,
all you have to do, yeah. All you have to do is literally have your offensive lineman get a hat on a hat.
Right.
And the worst situation you would have is Marshawn Lynch one-on-one right. with the linebacker.
And this is where, for the analytics people, game theory is like one of the great things that doesn't get talked about that much.
Yeah.
So for game theory, the idea is if you're responsive to personnel like you have for an entire 60-minute game, and you see a certain personnel group go into the game, your idea as an offensive coordinator is, oh, we need to put the pieces out there to counteract whatever is out there, right?
Sure.
No, but this is game theory. I'm not talking about anything else but game theory.
Yeah.
You're trying to set up something that allows you an advantage.
The best situation, yeah. Win every day.
When you see nine front, defensive linemen and linebackers out there, your first instinct is, okay, let's get more guys on the outside. We can beat that. The problem with that is game theory across the board, and this is where analytics people, when you play the percentages or what have you, you're going to get burned. You have to allow for other things to influence those decisions.
You have to Bruce Bochy.
You have to sit there and think, yes, we know they have nine guys, but you have a guy who's gotten you over 100 yards that night in total offense, a guy who, more than any other running back in the game, if you have to trust someone to get 1 yard...
Yards after contact?
Right? He is the guy.
Have you not been watching
right?
this Super Bowl?
Okay. And then on top of that, you have the advantage of the clock. You don't have to give the ball back to the Patriots. And if for some reason, and this is a guy who didn't have a negative play all night, if for some reason he doesn't get it, you have a timeout to go to third down.
Sure.
Right? And because you're wasting time, if you see that personnel, you can still bring in your jumbo package and run something off of it.
Yeah,
you can still change things up.
Here's what I say.
It's just...
is if you want... And this is my personal theory.
Mm-hmm.
Is that if you're going to pass... If you're going to spread it out...
Right.
Like they did, like the 49ers did...
Mm-hmm.
You have to tell your quarterbacks, you have to give them either, personally, it would be a sprint right or a sprint left,
right.
which is what the 49ers did with Montana a lot.
Right.
It's, you have one or two options.
It's an option.
It's not
they
there.
Call the sprint option.
You are running.
Right.
You have Russell Wilson. Why do you just want him to just take, catch, throw the, give
right.
him a chance to do something too.
Right.
Get him moving out of the pocket. The other thing you can do is, why not pass out of a jumbo package?
Yeah.
Why not have an eligible tackle or bring in
a taste of the Patriots on medicine?
You know? And give them a little play action fake to Marshawn Lynch and then throw.
Right.
Why spread it out? Have your guy in the shotgun with no protection and just go, we're just going to get it and throw it.
Right.
Like, you can do better than that.
Yeah.
And that's where it does come down to the theory of, they went big, let's spread them out, and then we'll just, throw
and
it.
That's,
it's like, you got to be a little bit more...
And that is where great coaching comes from. You brought up Bruce Bochy, and the one thing that Bochy does better than any manager in the game is not write out statistics, which he does. He's not a Ron Wotus is one of the most statistically inclined bench coaches in baseball.
Of course.
Let's put that up. He takes all that into account and then makes a decision based on the situation where it's most beneficial to his players. If you have Marshawn Lynch, who, let me make sure I get the numbers right here because I don't want to be this guy who messes this up. If you're Marshawn Lynch and you have 24 carries for 102 yards, all right, and you didn't have a negative play all night, right, and you're a guy who's...
How about them receiving yards?
Yeah, right? Thank you. I'll talk about that in a minute. And you're Bruce Bochy, you're sitting there going, oh, shit, he's got 100 yards. They're tired.
Let's throw 1 yard out there. See what happens.
It's literally the end of the game. Everybody's tired. Right? Here's the other thing. There's only one direction that you would want to run the football. Where would you want to run the football as the Seattle Seahawks?
Probably to the left.
Why do you say the left?
Because that's where their power runs come from.
I would say this. You would run wherever Vince Wilfork is not. Because that's also, Vince Wilfork is the only person.
Yes.
The only person who had shown that he can destroy your offensive linemen. Yeah. The one time they tried to run up Vince Wilfork, you know what happened?
He swallowed him up.
He stood up the offensive guard, shed him, and then destroyed Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
And then they never ran to him
never again.
And so it was just like, to me, the play calling was simple.
Yeah.
You say, maybe you have a design run to the right, and you go to the line, you say, oh, there's the biggest defensive lineman I've ever seen, and Vince Wilfork.
He's listed at 350, where you're like, no, he's not 350.
To this side.
Yeah.
And then you say, Marshawn Lynch, get us 1 yard and a Super Bowl trophy.
Get us a Super Bowl. And that's where, you know, and this is where, like, Greg Roman, this is where, like, get Roman, the idea that, oh, you're not thinking about the previous, you're thinking about, oh, shit, this is what we've seen against their goal line defenses in the 2 weeks of film leading up to it. This is what we have ready for that. And you're just like, hold on a second, all right? That's all well and good, but you also have 3¾ quarters of information that says you can run the football right down their fucking throat, right?
As long as it's not at Vince Wilfork.
Right. Seahawks, you have 162 yards. You have the most elusive quarterback in football. You have the best running back in football. And you're going to put it on a quick slant that is on film that the Patriots prepared for, and you to jump the route as soon as they saw it. What the fuck are you thinking?
Yeah, that's where they over...
I don't get that.
They outthought themselves.
Yes, they did.
And it reminded me of every situation where it was Bochy against the other manager.
Yeah, Ned Yost.
And it didn't matter who they went up against. Everybody else just...
Yeah.
They did it. Oh, well, that's the way it's done, or this is the way it was supposed to be. And Bochy, and I think great coaches are able to take in the moment, realize something, and go with it. It's not just, oh, I'm going with my gut. Yeah. I think so-and-so, go in there and pinch hit. I think you're going to smack one out of the park.
Yeah.
No. It's like you're saying, it's very calculated.
Right.
And Bochy does a really, really, really good job of taking in everything that's been happening in a game and being in the moment.
Right.
And I just really thought it was like, Marshawn Lynch is going to get the ball and score a touchdown.
You knew it was coming. Like, as soon as you saw them get to the one, it's like, well, fuck, they're in.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly what I thought.
And it just, it blew my mind when Russell Wilson cocked back the throw.
Yeah, I was like...
And... I literally, it was like slow motion. Yeah. I could not believe what I was seeing.
No, when I saw him make throw the interception, I literally jumped off the couch and I spiked the pillow because I was incredibly excited for the Patriots. I'm kind of a closet Patriots fan because of, you know, I was a fan of when they had their run back in '98.
Was that '98? We need to look that up.
Yeah, we'll look.
I think that's wrong.
I thought it was '98.
I think that's wrong.
'98 or '97.
I'm going to say 1996.
Hold on. Patriots, Packers.
I'm going to say 1996.
That was Super Bowl 31. You're right. 1996.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's right. Because the Broncos won in '97 and '98. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
So, that's right. Because the Packers went to back-to-back Super Bowls and lost the second time to the Broncos. That was the tilt-a-whirl play for John Elway. But yeah, I was pissed.
Oh, you know what else they were talking about? And how happy... And I was saying, don't do that. Like, no way. Yeah. They were saying, do you let them score?
Oh yeah, yeah. So that's so okay. So there is, the Belichick is the one guy who you're sitting there going like, if you do, and then you're saying you have two timeouts, and you'd have about 45 seconds. Let's say there's a kickoff out of the end zone. So you have to go basically to the 35 or 40. So you have to go 40 yards.
Would a field goal have tied the game?
Field goal would have tied it at 31, sent it to overtime. Right? But here's and here's the thing, and this is why I'm going to credit Belichick, even though game theory, the numbers say maybe you do let them score, or you take your time out. It's that Belichick, I think, he wanted to see what the formation was first off. When he saw the formation,
he probably liked it.
That's what I'm saying. When he saw the formation, he was sitting there going like, wait. And his defensive coordinator, Patricia, sitting there, and he's like, okay, watch for this. Because you can talk to the linebacker.
Sure.
So Collins, I think, is the guy you talk to. And so if Belichick doesn't like his defense, he would have called timeout.
Sure.
Because it would have been too important, regardless of the amount of time. Sure. Right? That's the part that makes Belichick a great coach.
Yeah.
Because game theory, your statistics tell you maybe you take your timeout or maybe you let them score. Mm-hmm. But what Belichick saw, and he'll never admit this.
Well, because he never tips the same. Not even at the end. Not even in the postgame interview.
No.
They were trying to ask him never. About them, and he was just like, "They're a great team." Yeah. He immediately
we were ready
changed.
For anything down there. Yeah. But at the same time, if he wasn't a fan of what his defense could have done in that situation, he would have called timeout, and that would have been that. Him and Patricia, Mike Patricia, were sitting there or standing next to each other the entire final drive. They were right there talking to each other about tendencies. Belichick is one of the great defensive minds in the history of football.
Yeah. Notorious for his, when he was with the Giants.
Yeah, because as a, under Bill Parcells, yeah. Then went to the Browns, then went to the Jets, etc. And now, that makes so much more sense when you don't think about it at the time, you're just like, call timeout. And there's the millions of coaches on Twitter who are like, oh, why don't you call timeout? Why don't you let him score? But Belichick knew, he's like, okay, let's see what they come out in. It's like, no, we can take care of this.
Yeah.
And
why not? Because the thing is, they still have to execute. Mm-hmm. They still have to score.
Right. Exactly. And that's what makes Belichick one of the three best coaches in the history of football.
Yeah.
Is that he sat there and was like, you know what? No, I think my defense can do this. Yeah. He didn't panic. And I think in the days to come, you'll hear that. Or you hear people like maybe bring that up. But that was something that when you and I were just talking about Bochy, I was like, that is why that call wasn't made. And that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up because it's true. Like if you play that by the numbers, you're not gonna wait to call timeout. You're just gonna call timeout right away and try and give you more time just in case. Yeah. But if you trust your defense and you trust that the preparation they've done against everything the Seahawks could run from a goal line scenario, then you're right. That's exactly what you do. So all the credit in the world to Bill Belichick and Mike Patricia, I think it's Mike is his first name, the defensive coordinator, for saying, you know what? No, we were ready for this even in our goal line set.
How mad is Marshawn Lynch right now?
I'd be super pissed, and I'm not coming back to the Seahawks next year. Not even gonna happen. And you said it. There's already the rumor that the Cowboys are ready to pounce. Yeah. Marshawn's a free agent this year. DeMarco Murray's a free agent. Would you rather have Lynch or would you rather have DeMarco Murray?
I would have Lynch. I think you have Murray is younger, but he is not as durable. Lynch is older, but does not have the injuries
and this is the thing. I think the Cowboys are kind of in win now mode. Tony Romo is.
But they have the best young offensive line.
Yes, they do. And you put Lynch back there; it's going to be incredible. You have the ability to add. You have to bring Dez Bryant back.
Of course,
you have the ability if you want to, and they'd have to go over the cap for it. Which you can bring Mike Crabtree back home to Texas, which has been the rumor.
You could get Mike Crabtree. Yeah. not for a lot of money.
No.
Because of his numbers and the decline in the injuries and yada yada yada, the foot thing.
Right.
Michael Crabtree is not going to get a shit ton of money.
The one thing is he's kind of a boring cowboy, though. If there was
he's kind of a boring anything, he will be scraping and clawing to get.
Yeah. I mean, if the Cowboys don't offer him is on the first day of free agency, I'm going to be completely baffled.
They'll try and pull him in. So, but it won't be for the kind of money that you think Michael Crabtree would get.
No, he won't. He'll get probably something like, it'll probably be like a big number contract, but the guaranteed money will be short, right? But let's get back to the game. So my favorite things from the game, Michael Bennett destroying all eight gaps in front of him. Did you see that? Every fucking play, he was lined up on an A gap, either side of the center. Mm-hmm. He stepped right between the center and guard. Mm-hmm. It was like on a regular basis. He had a great read off the snap. He saw that the splits between the center and the guard were somewhat wide. Plus, the guard was playing a little bit deep. And so he knew that if he could get through that hole...
No, you want to know what? That's set up by his other defensive linemen.
But they still did it even when Averill went out with the concussion.
No, it doesn't. When they did a lot of their stunts... Are you talking about when they were doing stunts?
No. I'm like talking about like head up. They had him in the A gap.
Yeah.
He was playing the two technique, and all he did was
two technique is head up.
Oh, no. So he's playing the three technique then.
Technique is outside. One technique.
One.
So it goes inside out is one.
Right. So he's playing the one technique.
We'll just go over this for people listening.
Yeah.
One technique, right?
He's looking at the microphone.
Inside shade. I'm talking to you. We're making
a little microphone.
Inside shade of the guard.
Right.
Is one technique.
That's also called the A gap.
Okay. Two technique is head up on the guard. Mm-hmm. Three technique is outside shade of the guard. Mm-hmm. Four technique
is
the inside shade of the tackle. Mm-hmm. Five technique, head up on the tackle. Six technique.
On the edge.
Seven technique.
On the edge. Seven technique is in coverage.
Inside shade of the tight end.
Oh, wow.
So eight technique.
And then nine technique. So it goes all the way out to nine technique?
Eight technique is head up on the tight end.
Okay.
Nine technique.
All right, then. Okay, then. Wow.
If I were not married, Tim, I would want to
defense.
I would want to be a defensive line coach at the college.
If I ever played defense, I would know what those are. But that was, he was tremendous.
Michael. No! I just got a text from Cole Gardner that said, tonight puts Brady in as best ever.
Okay, we'll talk about that. But no, we're going to save that, Cole. You're jumping. You're shooting your load too early. But that was a really cool thing. I really liked that a lot. The second thing was Shane Vereen. They basically made him...
How many passing yards did he get?
68.
Damn it.
Right?
Okay.
He
should have had a bigger role.
He was basically a bigger role. He had 11 catches.
He should have been the primary back. I know they did the whole thing with LeGarrette Blount. I did not think that LeGarrette
Blount would do
anything.
Liked,
he didn't do anything. They should have had more Shane Vereen, only because I wanted to get my stats.
But yeah, I know that. But the reason why they did that was because they knew when they could spread it out, put Vereen in the backfield, that Vereen was going to be against a linebacker most of the time. They weren't going to put...
Well, running backs are always on linebackers.
Sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. If you play against a dime...
95% of the time, they're against
a linebacker. But the Seahawks don't really change a lot on defensive personnel. And so the one thing I'll say about that was they did a great job in getting Vereen into areas that allowed Brady to expand his sideline-to-sideline approach, which has been the approach the Patriots have had for almost a decade now. And that allowed a lot of options to open up. It opened up Edelman to some big plays over the middle of the field. He was such a key in this game.
Yeah.
He was really a big part.
Yes, that's why I thought he would go 90 receiving yards and 60 rushing yards.
And there's other things, and we'll talk about that later on.
What?
When I get to my bets that I made. So I get to that. But that was a key. That was a big thing. I thought that was a great deal. And the third thing is Chris Matthews, who was not
amazing. Amazing. Show. Hardball.
Hardball.
Great stuff.
Wasn't Hardball. Chris Matthews. But he was on the practice squad through December. Made the team as a special teams player. Was kind of like the fourth, fifth wideout on the depth chart. Recovered the kick in the onside kick against the Packers. And then as the fourth wide receiver tonight, they actually opened it up and gave him some plays. And he delivered. He had two big catches downfield. He had a touchdown catch.
Which was
a big part.
Bill Walsh talks about this in his book, that the talent level across the NFL is almost even 100%.
Right.
And that it almost always comes down
to coaching and coaching, yeah,
and schemes and how you want to utilize players.
Right.
That is a perfect example. It was like, you know what? We are going to give this guy
his 6'6". Yeah. Let's give him a shot. And he did. They put Brandon Browner on him later on, and Browner got beat one time, but the second time he made a great play on a deep ball, knocked it down. But it was one of those things where one game, you have 2 weeks to prepare, and you can throw wrinkles like that in there if you want.
Tim, keep talking. I'll be right
back. All right. So Chris Matthews, that was a big, big deal. So I love the Michael Bennett stuff. He had a great game. And then Vereen out of the backfield, and then Chris
should
Matthews
should have got 90 yards receiving.
Right. I thought that was great. And the other thing was both the play of Darrell Revis and Richard Sherman, one catch thrown either of their ways in this game, and that was on the Baldwin touchdown, where Revis got screened with the umpire, and that's a play that so many teams like to run down on the goal line. It's the idea of a pick play, and then you have the outside receiver come not only across, but in front of the referee, which in this case is the umpire, and he almost acts as a pick guy for that receiver. And Revis, you know, in the heat of the moment, doesn't see the umpire, runs into the umpire, and all of a sudden Baldwin is free and he's wide open. And you know, if you're a guy who's like, oh, Revis, let him score the touchdown, I was like, that's not it. My whole thing was that play, you know, if anything, it showed what it took for someone of Revis's nature to have a bad play happen to him, you know?
For which one?
The touchdown to Baldwin, where they ran the screen play. Or the pick play, so to speak, over the middle.
Yeah.
Revis runs into the umpire. Every team in the NFL has that play.
Yeah.
You know? And Revis, in the heat of the moment, doing everything he can to stay with Baldwin because he knows the play was coming. He knew that's the only play that'd be coming at that point. And of course he runs into the umpire. And then you're like, it doesn't matter at that point. That was the only time either Sherman or Revis had one of the guys they were covering make a catch. They're the two best corners in football. It's not even close. And everybody was like, Sherman was throwing up 2-4. Like, oh God, Revis scored. No, it was 2-4 because the Seahawks had 24 points.
2-4, what do you mean?
2-4 is Revis's number. Everybody thought that Sherman was throwing shade on Darrell Revis. Instead, he threw 2-4 up because, look, now they're up 24-14. You know, and so I was like, okay, thanks, appreciate it. That's awesome.
Well, people look into things and, you know, what they want.
Also, Sherman had the all-time Sherman face when the pick was made. And I felt so, you know, I don't like the Seahawks at all, and I don't really like Sherman to an extent, but I think he's an incredible player.
Of course.
To see that happen when you play your ass off, you play well, and that happens, and in the back of the head you're hoping they run the football, and then to see a Super Bowl championship go away in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
And just to kind of see his face go from, you know, adulation to just, like, he almost wanted to, like, you know, cry.
It's kind of like a why face. It's like, why?
And so now, of course, the end of the game is going to be talked about with the fights that broke out and all that stuff.
I was just like...
And it's like, hey, a Pete Carroll team doing it again, like Pete Carroll does. But there was a great stat that actually got brought up. Since Pete Carroll came to the Seahawks, when the Seahawks give up 25 or more points, they're 1-18.
Or 1-18, yeah.
The only game they won was against the Saints in that ridiculous playoff game, the 7-9 with the beast mode run, yeah. But those are things that I really liked. I thought it was, I thought those things were really great. You're going to see other things come out. I think the Patriots did a really good job in containing Wilson, except for a couple of plays. The 30-second drive that the Seahawks had, that was them getting lax on defense, and you and I have talked about it, I think, a billion times by this point. We fucking hate defensive coordinators who decide to play far off the ball when there's 30 seconds left in a half. Play your base defense. If they beat you over the top, they beat you over the top. You know? They ran the draw play because it was the test. It's like, oh, if we can get some yardage out of this, hey, maybe we can get a field goal. And then all of a sudden, a Russell Wilson run for a first down, a second Russell Wilson run with a face mask penalty, and all of a sudden, it's first and 10 from the 11 with 20 seconds to go, or 10 seconds to go, and you find Chris Matthews.
Yeah.
It's just like, what the fuck are you doing? And Bill Belichick, I know he got to his defensive, his coaches, and he's like, yeah, that's bullshit. I'm sorry, you should not have that happen. And I think that this idea that, oh man, you know, you gotta watch the deep ball, it's like, how many times do you think a deep ball is gonna beat you? You need to be aware of all the possibilities on the field.
No, you can play for a deep ball, but sometimes the soft coverages are a little bit too much.
But I thought that would be talked about, which would be interesting. All right, so two things. First thing, my bookie, quote-unquote bookie, Elliott's in Reno. Obviously, we went over our prop bets. I'm going to tally those up in our next show that we do at some point in this next week. I'll have all those set up, ready to go, and we'll talk about how well Pete did, because I actually think Pete did pretty good on a lot of them.
Did I get my over on the points? Total points?
Yeah, 48. So good work there. All right. So, did I get something else here? Okay. So, I bet five things off of those bets. Well, Elliot, we had money from our NFL bets, and he rolled it over, right? And so, I took the Patriots, and I stretched out. So, I did two things. I bet the under, but I hedged that against an expanded point spread. And so the point spread was 1, Patriots up 1. But I said, you know what? I think the Patriots will win by more than 7 points. And so I took the Patriots over 7.5 at a big underdog. That's for a big payoff. And when you hedge a bet, you play that against something that's more practical. So I did that against the under. Then I took 3 other prop bets. Shane Vereen over total yards, 38.5, which was easy money. You and I both love that. Doug Baldwin receptions under 4.5, which I loved.
I did not. I liked over. What did he get?
He had 1. Touchdown catch.
Damn it.
Marshawn Lynch.
Yes.
Receiving yards. 21.5.
I don't think I took that.
Yeah. I took that.
Yeah, I don't think I did.
And it was awesome.
I know. Because he got that one. Yes, he got it all in one play.
And that's the thing. I'm sitting there going, like, the one play they love to run is either that wheel route. But they changed it up. They actually ran a slant and go. And Lynch beat his guy. And he was wide open, 31 yards. I'm like, I got money. And so I turned. I went up $60, which was awesome. And so, but that Marshawn Lynch catch, I'm just sitting there going like, I don't think they're going to, like, I don't think they have much in there. And they actually spread him out, and they threw it to him. I was like, what? And I was stoked because that means that I actually made money on the night. So good there. But the other thing let's talk about is where this putts Tom Brady.
You saw the text.
Yes. One of 3 quarterbacks with 4 Super Bowl rings.
Yes.
Joe Montana 1, Bradshaw the other. Bradshaw, as we talked about, rode the coattails of one of the best defenses of all time. Did have weapons. He was a very good quarterback, right? So he knew what he was doing. He won a couple MVPs, right? Joe Montana engineered some of the greatest drives in postseason history.
Yes.
You know, had 2 very good games against Cincinnati. You had the 55-10 blowout of Denver. That was, you know, pretty easy. Like, yeah, Joe Montana's one of the greatest ever.
they beat, was it Miami? Miami.
It was Cincinnati, Miami.
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati, Denver, if I remember right. So those are the four. And there's like, oh, this puts Tom Brady up there. And it's like stats, rings, all that. He is, if you want to do the old Mount Rushmore of quarterbacks, I say he deserves a spot.
Totally.
That's even, like, that's not a question. Yeah. But let's not forget how fucking good Joe Montana was.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Let's pump the brakes there a little bit. All right. Joe Montana, like, there's like little doubt. He was in the 80s. He was the best quarterback in the league, and it wasn't really even close.
Yeah. He won his four Super Bowls within a decade.
Yeah, right?
Tom Brady, he did four Super Bowls in
15 years. and 14 years. And, I mean, that's fine. I mean, you're talking about four. You're talking about four Super Bowls.
Which is nothing to scoff at.
No, like, few teams have four Super Bowls now, right? You have the 49ers, the Steelers, the Cowboys, the Packers, and now the Patriots, all with four Super Bowls, right?
Well, no, the Niners have five.
Well, I'm talking about with at least four, right?
Okay, yeah.
Steelers have six, Cowboys have four. Raiders have three, though. They're actually pretty close. Okay. And so the question becomes, oh, is Brady one of the greatest of all time? It's like, yes. Is he the greatest of all time? That's where I'm going to say no. And I think it's kind of, I think it's almost like Kobe to Jordan, right?
Of course.
Right? People are always looking for someone to knock off Jordan, right?
He will have,
Kobe has better stats than Jordan,
yes,
right?
Of course.
He's got five rings, Jordan's got six. You might as well call them equal in that to an extent. But my whole argument is, like, Montana was one of the most accurate quarterbacks of all time. He played with one of the greatest wide receivers. He played with the greatest wide receiver of all
time. Okay, anybody that's winning championships is always playing with great teammates.
Right, yeah.
They're surrounded with very good talent. They're not necessarily all just first ballot Hall of Famers.
Right.
But you don't... The only probably exception was the Warriors in 79 with Barry, who very much was the best player.
Yeah.
Didn't have much else. Had good support, but, you know, it's not like the Lakers teams where it's Worthy and
Michael Cooper.
Jabbar and Cooper and Magic or Bird, McHale or
Parrish.
You know, it's
DJ,
like, there's no Pippen and Rodman.
And Kukoc and Kerr and...
Well, they're definitely role players.
But that's what I'm saying. Is like, you can't say specifically, I mean, Montana was great, but, you know, he didn't have...
Roger Craig.
He had Roger Craig.
He had Jerry Rice.
John Taylor.
Yeah.
You know, he had Tom Rathman as a great fullback. He had a great offensive line. He had Dwight Clark for the first Super Bowl. You know, I mean, he had great teams, you know. Mm-hmm. And he did his damnedest. He was, without a doubt, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and Brady is too. But, like, Brady had some luck tonight. Montana's had some luck too, you know. Brady definitely had some luck tonight. But I'm not about to say that, you know, just because of the stats and whatnot. I will say this. He has lost two, right? He has lost two Super Bowls.
Yep.
Getting to six, though, he's the first quarterback to do that. That's fucking nuts. So he definitely has that going for him. But I'm not about to say he's the greatest of all time. He is, though, on the Mount Rushmore. Like, if you put Montana, Brady, and Peyton Manning, and if you want to throw LA and Marino up there, and the fourth one's kind of tough. You have to really think about that. Some people might even put Brett Favre up there for some reason. But, like, I mean, those three, without a doubt, on the Mount Rushmore. But Brady, with this one, he enters the stratosphere. And here's the thing. The Patriots aren't done. They could come back and do this again before Brady retires. But then if he gets his fifth, then all of a sudden, no quarterback has five.
Yeah.
You're looking at him with five And then you're just sitting there going like, okay, maybe you do have to concede he's the best. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have any problem with anybody saying he's the best.
Yeah, I mean, it would definitely be hard to...
It'd be hard to say no to that. But right now, I think he's right there.
I don't think you can... I don't think you can make the argument that, oh, he's part of a system.
Nope, he's not. You
can't do that.
He's not.
Any successful... Any championship team...
Has a good system, has good coaching, right. Has
a good system, has good players. They have good pieces in place, especially in football.
The great teams are when great talent and great coaching come together, right? It's not just the players. So I mean, that's
you could not stick Peyton Manning on the Jaguars and have them, you know, go and compete for a Super Bowl.
Right.
That wouldn't happen.
You could get one in the playoffs, maybe. But I don't see him as a Super Bowl contender, you know. And so, that's something that will be debated. But we're pretty solid on the whole debate that Brady's up there. He might be top three. In fact, he is top three.
He is. He's in top three.
He's in top three. Mike Manning, Montana, Brady.
I think Montana has to be number one.
He has to be. I can hear like Unitas. I can understand Unitas, but like if you throw Bratch on there, I'm gonna laugh at you. If you throw Staubach in there, I'm gonna laugh at you. I just think Marino has an opportunity to be up there. Elway has a chance to be up there. Brady, Manning, Favre, maybe if you're a big time stats guy. I mean, the other guy's Aikman, who if he didn't have concussions, knock his career short. You know, Steve Young's another guy. But guys who, when you look at them, it's like there's no doubt. Montana, Brady, Manning. There's no doubt about it. Those are the three best quarterbacks of all time in the NFL. For sure. So, but man alive, what a fucking game. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I mean, we've run the gamut here, I think. Big performances for Lynch. Brady sets the record for most completions in the Super Bowl.
I'm very interested to see what will happen with the Seahawks.
Yes.
Next season.
You're going to lose Lynch.
You're losing your workhorse. You're losing your defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
You still have all... I mean, I'm assuming you're still going to have all those defensive... units, those pieces will still be in place.
The Legion of Boom, yeah.
The offense, I mean, outside of Lynch,
yep, Wilson will
still be there.
Paul Richardson is someone who's got a lot of talent. He tore his ACL though, and unfortunately wasn't around the playoffs. Baldwin's fine. Curse is okay. Chris Matthews might turn out to be someone who could, be good for like a year or two.
Yeah,
but they. Without Lynch, Wilson is going to have to do a lot. And, it'll be his fourth year in the league, so maybe you can put a little bit more on him. But you don't want to put him in position to do too much. You need someone. And I would not be surprised at all if, let's say Lynch does go to the Cowboys. They pay him his big money. Not be surprised if DeMarco Murray goes to the Seahawks.
That would be interesting.
And the other one is maybe, and people might throw their TVs at me or something like that, but maybe Frank Gore goes in the Seahawks.
Nah, I think he would retire if he's...
Yeah. But, I mean, and we haven't talked about the 49ers, and I don't want to talk about the 49ers, but there's not a lot of things in 49er land that a lot of players are happy about right now.
So no.
There's some bad things going on, so there could be an issue there. I think that if you're a team that depends on a specific amount of talent, specific amount of skills, and Marshawn Lynch is a unique talent, and all of a sudden you lose that, now all of a sudden you're in a situation where you have to change, and while you might have the quarterback that can do it, you're going to all of a sudden have to, You know, all of a sudden, if you have a run-oriented offensive line who's not great in pass protection and Wilson's running around for his life most times, like, are you going to be able to build a passing attack? Like, are you going to be able to, get... Sure.
If you bring in a versatile running back, maybe... I don't think you will be able to find a bruiser with the longevity of a Marshawn Lynch, but you should be able to find somebody is a good pass catcher. That can complement Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Go a little bit more old school West Coast offense.
Right.
Have them be more of the Marshall Faulk. You are my little safety blanket. I'm going to dump the ball to you. You're going to go to me. 10 yards. I can see them doing that. I don't think they'll be able to. Turbin is a good back. He's not going to be Marshawn Lynch.
There is a chance that they go get a bell cow in the draft. You know, that's definitely a possibility. Because there are a couple of running backs coming out that could turn out to be dynamic and kind of be the type of running back Seattle looks for. But I think this begins a decline for the Seahawks. Because
they'll still be good.
They'll be good, but I think there's some teams in the NFC that are going to catch up. And when that happens... Like Arizona, they had everybody get injured this year. But they have a great defense. And if they have a quarterback, they have a pretty damn good offense. So they're going to be right there. But Dallas, all of a sudden you have to look at Dallas as a threat. The Packers, you have to look at them as a threat. None of the teams in the NFC South jumped out at you.
Well, so, that's the NFC South, though.
But in the end, Seattle could take a hit and still be considered the class of the NFC to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see them as runaway favorites. All the money's on Seattle to get back to the Super Bowl this in 2016.
Yeah.
That being said,
I think the odds makers are going to like Green Bay a lot.
Right.
And I think that they're going to like the Saints.
I don't know about the Saints.
I think the Green Bay is going to be the top team.
Yeah. I can see Green Bay.
In Vegas,
yeah.
As soon as they come
out. Well, they have odds tonight,
Well, yeah, but Green Bay will be the go-to team.
I think the Packers will be there. And like I said, the Cowboys have some decisions to make this offseason, but Jerry Jones, I think, knows that they have a chance to win now, and they have to win now.
They do, but they have never had a season like this from Murray before. Mm-hmm. DeMarco has never done this.
Right, and so...
I don't think he can do this again.
But that's why you can go and pay Marshawn Lynch.
Sure.
So it's
fair,
yeah. So I don't know, man. I really don't. One thing I also will say about this game is Pete Carroll did take the blame.
Sure,
which is good. You don't want to hear coaches kind of waver about with what happened there.
Well, you have to.
If you take advantage, you have to take responsibility for something like that. That's good leadership. Yeah. But I
still don't understand why you don't run the rock.
Yeah, that's just unbelievable to us.
It's almost the exact same thing. The Niners were on the 2, they were on the 1.5 or something.
Yeah, just unbelievable. Just run the football. Let's run the football.
Yeah.
If you can't get 1 yard, and this is what happened with the Packers. You get stuffed at the 1. If you can't get 1 yard rushing the football in the NFL...
You have to understand, you're going against elite defensive athletes that have one goal and one goal only, and that is to submarine your legs.
Sure.
So, for the most part, defensive linemen have an advantage if they use that technique. They're usually not as big.
Right.
They can get lower. And they're just going to try and move the pile, create a pile, and make the pile be behind the line of scrimmage so the linebackers can fill. So that can be tough, but when you have an all-world running back like Marshawn Lynch, like Frank Gore, and can't really say that about him yet, but with Green Bay, with Eddie Lacy,
yeah,
you should be able to get 1 yard. Yeah. I agree. You can't just go. You can't just look at any team and say you should get 1 yard.
Richard Sherman, according to Sports Illustrated, quote, a little bit surprised when the Seahawks threw it from the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
So pretty crazy.
Yeah. Seahawks, welcome to the 49ers.
Yeah.
Last year. Right. Or was that 2 years ago?
Yeah, something. And then
this is exactly where we were.
You had we can talk about the minute, the funny ancillary stuff, the halftime show and the commercials. Commercials were not good this year. A lot of companies played the tug at the heartstrings.
You won't have the weird commercials that we had 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
It's gone. They even said that they don't want that shock value, overly sexual. Like, that's gone.
Yeah.
You know?
But then you're overcorrecting. It's too schmucky.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
So,
it used to be people would almost watch, if you were not a football fan, a reason to watch the Super Bowl
was for the commercials.
Yeah.
$4.5 million for a 30-second ad this year.
Yeah.
The winners off the top of my head, the Esurance commercial with Walter White, Bryan Cranston playing Walter White from Breaking Bad. That was really good. And then, I can't believe I'm saying it, but Bud Light in the fourth quarter with the guy who gets the Bud Light and then goes outside and Bruce Buffer introduces him and he's in a giant digitalized virtual reality Pac-Man stage. That was pretty freaking cool.
That was a cool one.
I mean, that was like, there's some cool factors.
Me and Charles are both like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. But like you had Jeep using Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Your Land, This Land Is My Land for Jeeps being used around the world when you should go back and read why Woody Guthrie wrote that song in the first place. It was about how it's not just the white man's land, it's not just the Native American's land, but we can share this land. We don't have to take it from someone. So, nice work, Jeep.
Well, isn't that what they're doing? If they're showing Jeeps around the world?
No, but it's like this. It was about America.
America.
Why are you showing stuff in East Asia? Why are you showing stuff in Northern Ireland? Why are you just like, what?
Because they want Jeep to be.
Because manifest destiny. They want white people to take over the United States to become the United States of the world. That's why. But there are just so many schmucky, pull at the heartstrings, you know, bullshit ads that none of them really are like, get out of here.
I think the Bud Light one was good.
Yeah.
It was not the best.
Yeah.
The one that I would put ahead of that was the Clash of Clans with Liam Neeson.
Yes, okay. That was awesome. Yeah. That was really great.
And the coffee barista mispronounces his name.
It's like, it's Liam, and it gives him the Liam Neeson death stare.
Yeah. I can't remember what he calls him, but...
Yeah. So great. Liam. He calls him Liam.
Liam.
So step your game up. Super Bowl commercials.
But do we want them to? Because it was nothing but outrage.
Yeah.
It was like, this is horrible.
Hey, I want entertainment. Entertain me for 30 seconds. Don't bring this whole, like, old white man-centric fucking schmaltzy, let's tug at the heartstrings at Simple America. I'm sorry, but our generation is much smarter than that. We're kind of post schmaltzy ads, man. We're way past that. We want something a little bit subversive. We want something.
You gotta say that to the old white women.
Hey,
that we're offended by those old.
Hey, man.
By the Carl's Jr. commercials with women fighting, by the GoDaddy commercials.
Yeah.
By the Bud Light commercials, yeah. all those stuff.
Speaking of overly sexual advertising in the Super Bowl, Katy Perry did the Super Bowl halftime show.
Yes.
She was known for putting on a very good live show. She's known for a lot of excitement, a lot of great visuals and stuff like that. They have the giant lion that she stood on when she did Roar.
Sure.
She brought Lenny Kravitz out for I Kissed a Girl.
Yes.
Brought Missy Elliott out to do her little 5-minute thing for her costume change, mm-hmm. which I'm not lying, that was baller. I love Missy Elliott. Listen, there was a time where, like, you could conceivably say Missy Elliott was, like, the shit in hip-hop for, like, 3 or 4 years. Like,
sure.
I mean, so that was pretty cool. And then she finished it off with fireworks, and she rode around on the More You Know star for the last couple of minutes. Like, that, I have not seen a meme, like, that quickly go viral on Twitter, maybe ever. Like, as soon as they shot the fireworks out from her riding it around, like, that's all I saw on Twitter. Like, for 100 straight posts. So, bravo, Twitter. I mean, you guys were on top of it. So, I mean, it was good shit all around. I thought it was a fine show. It wasn't blow away. I mean, like, Bruno Mars kind of blew people away just from, like, a song standpoint. Like, he put a lot of musicianship in his show, and it was
sure.
It was really a great, from a performance show.
Sure.
Like, a lot of people said it was the best since Prince did it at the 2007 Super Bowl. Bears and
Nobody
Colts.
Was better than Prince.
Nobody was better than Prince. Say, fucking no. Go back and watch it. Boner Guitar. That's all I gotta say. Purple. Play Purple Rain in the Rain! It's over!
It was not wet!
It's so over! Yeah. Prince didn't get wet! He was in an invisible force field bubble and no rain fell on him. It's like God chose rain to fall everywhere except on Prince.
And gave him a phallic guitar.
I mean, it was incredible.
You know,
like, go back and watch that.
Is that when I saw, I didn't get the phallic reference.
Oh, yeah, no, nobody did until you, like,
And, well, then everybody was like, oh, the repulsive halftime show with Prince.
Old
and
white his, people getting angry, man.
And his phallic guitar being blown
people.
Up. You know, his shadow on the...
Well, Prince, on the Prince is what led to you and your Bruce Springsteen, your Tom Petty, like, the string of The Who. Like, the string of, like...
The Who?
The Who.
The Who were before Prince.
Yeah. No. The Who was like 3 or 4 years ago.
The Who?
Not The Who. Who did the...
Oh, you're talking about halftime performances.
Bob O'Reilly, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I thought you were saying, like... Prince influences
Oh,
people.
Fuck no.
I was like, wait.
He could have. I would believe it. Prince was like, Purple Rain came out in 84. He influenced such groups as the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Elvis Presley, Richie Valens.
I
would totally believe that. He influenced Woody Guthrie back in. He influenced Beethoven. I mean, goddamn. I really want, God forbid the day Prince dies, I really want Rolling Stone in his obituary to say that Prince influenced such artists such as Mozart and Beethoven and Grendel and all those fucking, just like, the greatest classical composers of all time. That Prince is the only, Prince is the only guy who knew about time travel and knew it to go back. And just sat there, and he had his cane. Did we talk about Prince at the Golden Globes?
No.
How he won the Golden Globes?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about that, where he came out with his cane.
Yeah.
And like, you saw...
We didn't talk about it, but
what's her name? Allison Janney. Like, you saw her legit freak the fuck out at Prince. Like, it was like the greatest thing in the world. I was like, God damn. We could do a Prince show. Like, we could, like, listen to Prince discography and do a Prince show.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, damn. I mean, we could do 3 hours on Purple Rain.
I think I could.
You could do an entire 2 hours on the whole Lake Minnetonka scene. I mean, that's
so good.
My God. We also need to make sure Bill Simmons is still alive. Let's make sure.
Yeah.
Grantland's going to be insufferable tomorrow if you don't like Bill Simmons. Like, this whole week is just going to be, like, unbelievable.
He's gonna do an article of
Simmons.
He will do a Brady, you know, greatest of all time question
right.
mark
right
thing. I don't think he'll say that he's the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that it's in discussion.
I'm trying to see if there's anything else. They're already 6-1 in the favorites, the Seattle Seahawks, to win Super Bowl 50. Which is going to be hilarious when Marshawn Lynch signs
with
the Cowboys.
We'll see after free agency.
Yeah. Trying to see if there's anything else. Just kind of going through. Of course, this meme, Seahawks t-shirts, arrive tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
I mean, we're killing it tonight. Joe, if you're not even on Twitter, just go to Twitter and just search Super Bowl and just love life for 3 hours. It's going to be incredible. It's seriously just going to be incredible. I mean, look at that face. 4-time Super Bowl champion Joe Belichick. Look at that. Is that a cold sore? That looks like it's a cold sore. Like he just slept with Pete Carroll's wife. You just know he took it. Richard Sherman, though, totally respecting Tom Brady. I think you have to.
Hey, I told you. I said that Brady was going to take what the defense gave him. And cut him up. I didn't think he was going to challenge anybody necessarily.
Yeah.
I thought his interceptions were really, really weird.
Yeah.
That first one was horrible.
Yeah, he got pressured though. They ran that.
Twist. I know that.
They ran that twist.
Like,
yeah.
That was like So I guarantee you, if you go back and look at old Joe Montana film, you can find big games where he does probably have some bad interceptions. Right.
I don't think Montana ever threw an interception in the Super Bowl. I think it was 11 touchdowns, no interceptions. I'm pretty sure of that. They ran that beautiful twist.
That's definitely one of those. It's like throw it in the ground, throw it in the back of the end zone.
Yeah, he could have thrown it out of the end zone. I couldn't believe that.
Like, it was just so incredibly short. You could have just eaten the sack and taken your three.
Right.
Like, it was just that was really weird. And then the second one, I don't know why Gronk sat in that part of the zone that he sat in.
Yeah.
Where if he would have just kept going down the seam, he either would have split the safeties or would have found space that I think he would have been more open in.
I think.
And so it's like, Gronk, why did you sit there? And second, like, Brady, why did you throw it? Because he sat literally right behind a linebacker and threw right to a linebacker. Ooh. But you know what, though? It happens all the time. You kind of get tunnel vision on one or two things, and I can totally see how you just don't even see the guy.
Daryl Bovell and his post-gamer owns the play call but said that Ricardo Lockett could have fought harder for the ball. That's bullshit. I mean, Lockett's going right... He's going right after the ball. The ball was thrown...
You mean on the interception?
On the interception.
Okay, yeah, so...
What are you doing?
The quarterback is behind him.
Right.
He cannot see. He is going to the ball.
Right.
And then he gets hit by the cornerback who is also going for the ball.
Beats him to the ball.
Yeah. So how is he supposed to fight harder?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it that doesn't make sense.
Right. On the Gronk pick, two things. Great play by Bobby Wagner. Good hands. That's a good play. But I want to say that was an option route, and I think...
Well, yeah, against
the
zone.
I think the option was seen only if the hole was not there. If Gronk sees the hole, I think that is the play, is you sit in the hole. But that, I think, was just bad timing on Brady's part, because by the time the ball was gone, Wagner had time to recover, and he made a great play on it. So that's what I'll say about that pick. It's a hell of a game. One of the greatest of all time. Definitely it's another Super Bowl that comes down to a play at the 1 yard line.
Yep.
Last time that happened, of course, the Rams and Titans in 2000, one of the greatest Super Bowls of all time.
You could say the Niners.
The Niners game. against the Ravens, goal line stand.
And then they did that horrible, weird fade to Crabtree on the fourth down.
Greg Roman, ladies and gentlemen. Who's now the Buffalo Bills offensive coordinator for some reason?
What what are the odds on the Bills?
I don't know. Let's see. 50 odds.
They have to be pretty good. Actually, no.
They have to get a great defense, though. That's let's see what they got here. Super Bowl 50 odds. Let's see here. VegasInsider.com. This is where we're getting our numbers. So the Seahawks are basically 6-1, now 13-2 odds. Patriots 8-1. Green Bay 10-1. Broncos 10-1. Cowboys 20-1. I jump on all over the Cowboys at 20-1.
I want the Bills.
Somehow the 49ers are 25-1.
People are drunk in Vegas. They have not been paying attention.
Buffalo Bills 75-1. Oh, I would get on odds. Why not?
Fuck. Right?
They have a great defense. They have Sammy Watkins on offense. I mean,
They have drunk Kyle Orton.
No shit, Kyle Orton almost got them to the playoffs. How come people don't let Kyle? How come the Titans didn't start Kyle Orton for 16 games this year? My God,
don't know.
So,
I wonder if my fart made it on.
I'm pretty sure it made it on there. So
we turned the game up.
So, but then Super Bowl 49, and next year it's going to be. In Santa Clara.
And in Sonoma, California.
And we'll be probably watching it from our couches because we're not paying $2,000 a ticket to go
see it. Never going to a Super Bowl ever.
Yeah. Unless I'm invited somehow.
Yes.
So. Or I play him a game. So, who knows.
Do you think we can get media credentials?
Yes.
Yeah. I think we should.
I think we do. I totally could. I bet I could talk to some people. I was like, can I get creds?
Please. That'd be dope. From the Media Week.
Just Media Week. Just go down there. I don't want to be a part of Media Week, though, because I think it's stupid.
Why?
I think it's stupid.
We would never get to go then.
So I want just sideline creds. I want to be an independent media. We can get two creds for you and me. We'll go down there, and I'll have a camera, and I'll take two pictures the entire game. And
then one of your junk.
And then one of my junk. I'll go over and I'll talk to the cheerleaders. And we'll call them the night. So.
Then we'll go find Rob Gronkowski.
And we'll tell him about the new restaurant I'm opening called Sweet It's. And, we didn't even mention how fucking drunk you think Rob Gronkowski is right now. So, like, it's 2 hours, 2.5 hours after the Super Bowl.
He's done his media.
He's chugging so much food. Phoenix, seriously, dude. All the Arizona State co-eds. He went to U of A. How many people are driving from Tucson to go party with Rob Gronkowski tonight?
Slob on his knob.
My God.
Yeah.
He's going to own the state. He'll buy half of the state of Arizona.
So here's what we have to do. The next few days, we are going to follow the Twitters,
right.
Follow the Facebooks,
uh-huh.
Follow the tree papers things,
right?
The things that they print the stuff on that they give
newspapers.
To you physically. Right. That's what they are.
That's right. Newspapers.
We need to recap all the crazy.
Oh, we have to hear Gronk stories. There's gotta be Gronk stories.
We need to reach out to his agent and say, "Listen, listen.
If I told you that we were a podcast and we've had 181 shows and we've had 1,000 total listens, like, would you be interested in allowing us to have?
Do we have 1,000 total listens?
Yes, we have 1,000 total listens.
That's pretty awesome.
Pretty awesome. Yeah, for all our shows, that's pretty awesome. So, but
is that through iTunes?
No, it's through where we host the actual file. So, so we're about to hit the 1,000 mark. Congratulations to us.
Cool.
So, but next time. Hopefully Gronk stories. Please, Gronk stories.
I just thought of that Bill Belichick.
I just slept with all your wives. And you're trying to figure out which one of them gave me this cold sore, aren't you? Like, you just, like, wait. It's like, wait to hear who did it. So.
Oh, God.
But next week, and then I'll tally up the bets.
Yep.
and see how Pete did. I'll actually go back and because I'll listen to the show.
I contradicted myself.
I think you might have like a couple times, but I think you did pretty well. You took a lot of favorites. You didn't really take too many crazy underdogs or anything like that.
I made some pretty crazy personal.
Well, you made yeah, because fuck that.
I had Shane Vereen with 140 like total yards. And
he had 11 catches though. I mean, I would have liked to see a number on that. Yeah. But yeah, so we'll do that. We'll probably next week. I'll be busy on Saturday, but maybe we can do something on Sunday or something. Okay. It's gonna be a busy weekend.
All right.
Thanks for listening. 4 in 24 hours, fucking podcast marathon, man. Yep. Good work, really awesome stuff. So we will see you next time here on Los Livingston Brothers.
All right. Good night.
Night.
Hey, if you want to keep following Los Livingston Brothers, you can see us on Facebook. Just go to the Los Livingston Brothers fan page, give us a like, leave comments, all that good stuff. And on iTunes, make sure to subscribe and also give us a nice, pretty-looking review and throw 5 stars up on us because we are like a Rob Van Dam frog splash because it's the 5-star frog splash. On top of that, if you don't use iTunes to listen to your podcast, you can also go to LosLivingstonBrothers.com, click on the radio shows tab, and you'll be able to listen to all the shows dating back to our very first show at KCY. In 2011.
Man, that's a long time ago. Man, I'm old.